This episode contains topics that may be triggering for some listeners. This is Terre Haute, Indiana, nestled on the banks of the Wabash River on Indiana's western border. The name Terre Haute is French for highland. Hundreds of spectators from the community gather to cheer on the Terre Haute North Marching Band at the annual Indiana State University Homecoming Parade. While many loving families and decent, hardworking people call this place their home, to one man, this city represents a darker past clouded by shame and regret. Welcome to Tell Us Where It Hurts, a conversational podcast around health, well-being, and the many ways people across Central Indiana are offering a helping hand. I'm Chris Kirshner, and in this very special season, we continue to examine the opioid epidemic through the eyes of one man named Kelly, who's in long-term recovery from substance use disorder. Kelly's journey leads us to this very moment. Now living in Indianapolis, this is a glimpse of his life now, after reaching a full year of sobriety.
It's so amazing when I hear, you know, you tell what your life was like, and then I see you now, and you know, here it is, more than a year, right?
Yeah.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
On that milestone. And here you are in a beautiful home. You have a special person in your life. You have a dog.
Yeah.
And you look healthy.
Thank you.
And you sound healthy. How do you feel? I mean, when you think about that time to where you are now.
Coming up on my year, it was, it's an amazing feeling, but, and I've heard a lot of other people in recovery talk about this, like, it's never as good as it seems. I disagree. I embraced it, and it was an amazing day for me. That was an amazing week for me. I had a lot of weird dreams leading up to it. I had a lot of going back in time, daydreaming about where I was and what life was like. And the week leading up to my year, I just kept thinking about, man, I was homeless. I was homeless. I was sleeping in a tent, starving. And that was my reality a year ago. And I just couldn't be more grateful. And I never would imagine that I'd be here a year later. I knew that life would improve, but I couldn't have dreamed for what came about.
So tell me again about where you're living now. I just want to hear a little bit. We were talking before we started, and I wanted to hear your thoughts about this area where you live.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I love the craziness. I love the hustle and bustle. There's always something to do. My girlfriend and I, like, we go down to Hi-Fi. We hit up all the shops at Fountain Square. We're over at Garfield Park, and they got an arts and crafts show going on with live music and food. And, I mean, it's just every weekend there's something going on.
You're living your life.
I'm living life, man. I'm doing it.
Do you try not to look so far down the road?
It's good to have goals, and it's good to set plans for the future. But I don't hang around too far in the future, because then I'm going to end up losing myself. And nothing good comes out of that. I just need to worry about today. I need to focus on what I got to do to get through today. And I know that if I stay clean and sober, and I know that if I do the next right thing, that everything's going to work out in the future, that everything's going to be okay. That's what I know.
At the end of our previous episode, Kelly mentioned a glimmer of hope during his time in sober living. He'd finally made contact with his estranged daughter, Peyton. After months of texting his children, "I love you," Kelly finally received an "I love you" back. We spoke with Peyton to get her perspective on that moment.
So you didn't talk to him for a period of a couple years, for the most part. What made you decide to start talking to him again? How did you build that relationship, and why did you build that relationship back again?
I was really hesitant about texting him back at all after he went back to Fairbanks for the second time. And was actually doing what he needed to. He had gotten a hold of me probably every day saying that he loved me, and he would send me things here and there, just send me an update. And one of the first things I noticed was the way that he was typing and texting. It all made logical sense, and he just seemed like he was clear-headed. And I was still, at the time, hesitant about messaging him back, even though I felt like I could tell that he was better, because I was scared that he would go back to that life. But after my brother found out about this heart disease that he had, it was a hereditary disease, they had a benefit tournament for him, and my dad came to the benefit tournament. And whenever he was there, my mom saw him, my brother saw him, and his ex-wife saw him. And every single one of them said that he just looked like a completely different person. And he looked so much better, so much healthier and happier. And so whenever I had heard that they saw him in person and that he seemed better, that he seemed more like his old self, it made me more open to replying to him more and trying to talk to him and have a relationship. And then here a couple weeks ago, actually it was my brother's birthday, my dad and his girlfriend came to town because they were going to take my brother out to dinner for his birthday. And my brother ended up having to go to the hospital because he was having issues with his heart. And so my dad and his girlfriend ended up coming here and spending time with me and Evie for a little bit. And that was the first time that I had seen him in however long it had been.
And what was that like?
It was really nice. Like I said, he's always been like my best friend. Our personalities are a lot alike. I feel like I've always been more like my dad, and we just get each other's humor. So it was really nice to see him, and Evie adored him. She loved him. She loved seeing him. She wanted to show him her bedroom, and she was just really excited for him to be here.
And it's interesting, too, that your brother's health, that it sounds like, brought you all back together, or at least opened that door.
Yeah, most definitely.
While Kelly's son wasn't able to participate in this podcast due to the health issues that Peyton mentioned, we wanted to hear Kelly speak about their rekindled relationship, as well as his reconnection with family due to his ongoing success in recovery.
My son recently had heart surgery. He had to have a heart valve repaired. They either were going to repair it or he'd have to get an artificial one. He's just going to turn 25. You know, he got a hold of me that day that he found out that he had to have this surgery. And, you know, the things that I focus on of that day in particular is, like, at any other point in time, like if it had been a year ago or something, this situation came up, I wouldn't have got that phone call. He wouldn't have got a hold of me because I wasn't any good to him. You know, what shined through in my mind is, like, the fact that that's when I felt like he started to realize maybe he was getting his dad back, because he actually contacted me to let me know that he had to have surgery. And not at any point during that day did I think about using or drinking to cope with the stress. You know, I'm just grateful that I can be here for them today and be clean and sober doing it and be in a right state of mind. You know, I've got my relationship back with my kids. I just, you know, the weekend before last, I went to Terre Haute and I got to visit my granddaughter. I've got a granddaughter too, by the way. She's 6 years old. She just turned six. I'm just very grateful for my life today.
Was it hard going back to Terre Haute?
A lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a wonderful girlfriend. She's very supportive. She also works her own recovery. She's just an amazing human being. She's helped me so much. And, you know, we're driving around Terre Haute and I'm just overwhelming her with just, oh my God, there, you know, I'm just pointing everything out to her because that was my life right there, you know. And even though my life was crazy, I've got a lot of good memories there. And so, yeah, there's a lot of anxiety to it.
So here you are a year later, fresh start. Talk about some of the struggles, though, you still face. I mean, it can't be, I mean, after a lifetime of addiction,
yeah,
you still have struggles.
Absolutely.
What are they and how do you deal with them?
You know, I've just been able to equip myself with different techniques of dealing with my stress as far as meditation, music therapy, working out, positive things. That's where work and recovery and working these steps play the biggest part because, you know, the people that I connected with since I've been in Indianapolis, they are my recovery network. They're the people that I can reach out to. They've accepted me for who I am, how I am from day one. You know, they didn't judge me. And I never would have like grasped getting up in front of people and speaking. And it's like I do that every week. You know, I go to Fairbanks and I give my lead to people in detox and residential. And I speak at meetings and I just try to carry the message the best I can. So
I'm just so amazed by the courage it takes for you to be where you are right now, especially given the fact you didn't have a lot of guidance along the way. I mean, this is what you've always known.
Yeah.
And to completely change what you've always known and to go somewhere that's so unfamiliar.
Yeah. I've done a lot of work on myself as far as how I handle life in general. You know, I actually, I answer the phone to people. I check my mailbox. Staying clean and sober is just a small part of what you're trying to accomplish. You're trying to become a better person. You're trying to be a spiritual, humble, and kind human being. You treat people how you want to be treated, and you don't take things personally. When I get anxiety, like situations like this, for example, I face it head on. I face my fear today. I don't run from it because that just makes things worse. And also working with a good sponsor and working steps, that was when I realized that my past wasn't all for nothing. That I was going to take what I was learning and apply it. And without that past, I wouldn't have the wisdom and the knowledge that I do to be able to back up what I'm trying to express to people about what they need to do and what the steps I needed to take to better my life.
Kelly continues to spread that wisdom and knowledge for other people entering active recovery. But some wounds aren't healed easily. As Kelly continues to work on himself and maintain his sobriety, those affected by his drug misuse continue to mend their own wounds. Peyton, how hopeful are you that this is the start of a new chapter for your dad, for you, for your family?
I'm very hopeful, and I think that it's going to stick. I think that I've never seen him actually go to rehab and do what he's supposed to do and take those steps to recover the way that he is right now. And I just, he has no interest in doing any drugs or drinking or any of it. And it makes me really hopeful that he's going to continue to do that and feel like that.
How often do you see him and talk to him now?
We text every day, but I don't get to see him just because he lives so far and we both have a lot going on right now. Me and my daughter did FaceTime him yesterday, though, so that she could tell him about her first day of school.
How do you approach, if you don't mind me asking, you know, the relationship then with your own daughter, and how do you reconcile that relationship with her grandfather?
I don't really know how to approach it now that he is there and involved. I've not really ever sat down and talked to her about why he wasn't before. She doesn't really ask why. But currently we've been trying to plan to go up there and see them sometime. And she wants to go and have a sleepover with him and his girlfriend and do all these fun things with them. She's really excited to have him in her life because she's already got some really great grandparents, and now finding out that she's got another grandpa that she didn't really know about a whole lot, she's been really excited to meet him and also have all those memories with him.
Peyton, you've shared so much, and you've been so generous with what you've shared, and hoping that those who hear this story, you know, they'll be able to relate to it, or it will help them understand, you know, what happens when people have to deal with this.
And unfortunately, it can be, for the kids that are involved, it can be really embarrassing, and people shame you growing up, but it's something to, I want other kids to listen to this and see what these kids are going through. And to not judge them or make them the outcast because of it.
Is that what you felt like?
Yeah, for sure. I had some good friends, but those that weren't all that understanding, you know, there was a lot of shame and embarrassment that came from it.
Well, I hope that this healing can continue for you all.
Yeah, for sure. I think that this will be a big step in the right direction, and I think that this is going to help my dad a lot. I really hope that it does, for him to open up and get his feelings and his story out there and to feel like he's helping someone else. I think that that's going to give him a lot of positives. And I think that there's a lot of people that could really use hearing this, either because they know someone going through it or they themselves are going through it and they don't realize the effect that it's going to have on their family yet.
Kelly works daily to repair his relationships with loved ones and make amends with those affected most by his drug misuse. However, to honor those affected who've passed, Kelly can only continue working on himself.
Your mom meant so much to you and such a huge impact in your life, and I always feel like I'm sure she's still with you. What do you think she would think about where you are right now?
Oh, wow. Oh, man, I think she'd be surprised. And I think she would just be amazed. The guilt that I carry still to this day is all the worrying she did because of me. And I know there was times where she didn't know if she was ever going to see me again or if I was ever going to wake up, because that's where I was at in life. And I think she'd be very proud, and I think it would make her life a lot easier today if she was still here, just to not have that worry and to know that I'm doing the right thing and I'm okay.
On the season finale of Tell Us Where It Hurts.
We lose sometimes the compassion. There are words in society like junkie that just add to this stigma when what we're talking about is a disorder.
Everybody's different. Everybody's recovery is different. What works for me may not work for the next guy, but people have options.
If you or anyone you know suffers from a substance use disorder, please call 800-225-HOPE for more information. That's 800-225-4673, or go to ecommunity.com/Fairbanks. I'd like to thank both Kelly and Peyton for sharing their stories. And thank you for being part of our journey as we all become better listeners. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please rate and review the podcast. We love hearing from you. I'm Chris Kirshner, and this has been Tell Us Where It Hurts. Until next time.